Hello, and welcome to the Healthy Lifestyle Show with Dr. Dio Lanier. It's Wednesday, January 21st. It's the day after Inauguration Day. I hope all of you were watching the activities and coverage yesterday if you weren't there. But I just want to say congratulations to President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden. So we are actually airing the show at should say, every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information on me and the services I offer, you can go to my website, which is www.drdiolanier.com. And once again, that's www.drdiolanier.com. Now, last week we discussed the use of holistic self-care and gave an overview of Ayurvedic medicine and traditional Chinese medicine. Today, we're actually going to complete the overview of traditional Chinese medicine and also to discuss body work and the different therapies that fall under that category therapies that are involved. So for traditional Chinese medicine, as I mentioned, I started discussing it last week. And just to go over what we talked about then, the philosophy of traditional Chinese medicine is based on prevention primarily. And so the traditional Chinese medicine takes all of that into account, the preventative nature of it. And the point of it is to educate the patient with regard to lifestyle so that they can assist in their own therapeutic process. And a lot of times a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner will educate the patient about diet, exercise, stress management, rest, and relaxation. I mentioned last week that diagnosis might describe the body in terms of elements like wind, heat, cold, dryness, and dampness. Also, the terms yin and yang are used by the traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, and that describes the different opposing physical conditions of the body. So if you're looking at yin and yang as it refers to the human body, the yin refers to the tissue of the organ, while yang refers to its activity. In yin deficiency, the organ doesn't have enough raw materials in order to function, and in yang deficiency, the organ doesn't react adequately when it's needed to. So I think where I left off last week was talking about the component of traditional Chinese medicine called qi, which in Western medicine is not talked about at all or acknowledged for that matter. And so Dr. Ni, who is the president of Yosan University of Traditional Chinese Medicine in Marina Del Rey, California, which is where I'm getting this from, actually said that qi is difficult to define. And so it's referred to as the life force, also translated to mean vital energy or living force. But basically, it is the all-inclusive nature of the many types of energy forms within the body, and it flows through the body following pathways called meridians. So the meridians flow along the surface of the body and through the internal organs, and each meridian is given the name of an organ through which it flows, for example, liver or large intestines, and these different organs can be assessed for treatment through their meridians. And usually in terms of illness, that's thought to occur when the blockage of qi occurs in one of those channels. So it's essential in traditional Chinese medicine to keep the qi flowing in order to maintain health, and that's the basic idea. So there are 10 organs that are arranged into a system that places each one of the five categories. And those categories are fire, earth, metal, water, and wood. And that system is called the five-phase theory. And it's based on the premise that each organ either nourishes or inhibits the proper functioning of another organ, just as the basic elements also either act adversely or beneficially to each other. So for example, fire, the elements are written down, and so fire melts metal, and when you're looking at the organs, the heart is associated with fire, and in traditional Chinese medicine, controls the lungs, which are associated with metal. So it's actually quite complicated, and so I'm not a specialist in that area, but that is the basic description of how things are arranged. The organs are also divided into two groups of yin and yang organs. So the spleen, the heart, the lungs, kidney, and liver belong to the yin group because they're what you'd call more substantial organs or more solid, whereas the yang organs are hollow organs like the intestines, small intestines as well as the large intestines, the stomach, and the bladder, where things just pass through, and those are considered more functional. So when you're looking at the practice of traditional Chinese medicine, in treating a patient, a practitioner may first look for the pattern of the details that they see on observation. So just looking at the patient and seeing if they can discover the disharmony in the system of that individual. And what they're looking at is what the patient's how they're reacting to an illness and what the cause of the illness may be, and then they look to treat that specifically. So when in diagnosing a problem, if you're used to Western medicine, where we'll use things like blood tests or x-rays or endoscopy in order to get an idea of what's going on inside the body, traditional Chinese medicine will use non-invasive methods like inspecting the complexion or general demeanor and body language, as well as the tongue, questioning the patient on symptoms and medical history, diet, lifestyle, history about the present complaint or what's going on right now, as well as any previous or concurrent therapies that they've received, which you also can see in Western medicine. Also, they listen to the tone and strength of the voice, smelling of any body excretion. So, for example, the odor of the urine, the breath or body odor, and lastly, palpation, which is feeling with your fingers of the pulse in different areas, as well as the abdomen or stomach area, and the meridians and or acupuncture points. And so what they're doing then is examining the strength or weakness of the qi or, quote, blood, end quote, which in traditional Chinese medicine, includes lymph and other bodily fluids, in order to assess how those affect the organs, the tissues, and the different layers of the body. So after there's a diagnosis made, there are a range of different treatment methods that can be used, and I'll just briefly discuss a few. The first would be herbal medicine. So herbs are still a primary part of traditional Chinese medicine, and Chinese herbal prescriptions are generally made up of a variety of ingredients that could be bark or roots or oyster shell, derived from vegetable, animal, or mineral products. And the herbs can be taken internally, so ingested, or they can be prescribed as herbal pills, powders, salves, and soaks and things of that nature. Diet therapy is another method of treatment. And so the most basic element of Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, is diet therapy. And so they utilize the concept of healing foods or functional foods in order to treat what's going on in the body and what they've diagnosed as the problem. Another method is acupuncture, and that's used extensively. And what is done in that case, and I'll talk more about acupuncture in next week's next week's radio show, is using the meridian system and all of the surface points. So there are thousands of surface points that correspond to the meridian lines, and acupuncture uses special needles that are placed strategically into those acupuncture points in order to correct or rebalance the flow of energy within a specific meridian. I'm sure you may have seen a picture of a human body, and there are all these lines connecting the different areas, and so that's what it's referring to. Reestablishing the flow of qi, it's believed that that will consequently relieve any pain and or restore health. There's also massage, as well as energy healing. I will also talk about Qigong and Tai Chi next week, but those are methods of energy healing and other therapeutic exercises, and those are considered another important aspect of traditional Chinese medicine in treatment and used primarily as a means of stress reduction as well as preventative therapy. So that's completing the overview of traditional Chinese medicine. In case you're just joining me, we are talking about using complementary and alternative medicine in health and wellness. This is part two today, and you're listening to the Healthy Lifestyle Show with Dr. Dia Lanier, and I want to thank you so much for tuning in. So last week we talked about holistic self-care and other issues and a little bit of traditional Chinese medicine. Today we finished that up, and now I'm going to go right on to talking about the different forms of body work, of which there are many, many forms, and I'm only going to talk about a few today. But body work refers to a wide variety, a wide range of therapies such as massage, deep tissue manipulation, movement awareness, and bioenergetic therapies that are used in order to improve the structure and functioning of the body. So there are a lot of benefits of body work in all of the different forms, and those include things like pain reduction, relief of musculoskeletal tension, improved blood and lymph circulation, and as well as promoting deep relaxation. So the use of therapeutic touch throughout the centuries has really been applied in order to heal the body and to reduce the tensions of daily life. And now those are being applied more and more in modern medicine as well. And so today there are well over 100 schools, probably significantly more than that, that focus on body work, from therapeutic massage to structural body work therapies like Rolfing, which I talk a little bit more about. Those employ deep tissue techniques in order to restructure the body. And then there are also movement therapies like the Feldenkrais method and the Alexander technique that help to realign your body through correcting postural imbalances. And what that does is basically promote more efficient function of the nervous system. Pressure point therapies are another form that apply pressure on various areas of the body in order to relieve pain and to restore proper energy flow. And then there are bioenergetic systems of body work like acupressure, polarity therapy, therapeutic touch, and Reiki that all are believed to help balance energy in the body and bring about enhanced health and well-being overall. So just focus today on massage as well as some movement therapies I'll discuss and Rolfing just briefly. The therapeutic massage within the last two decades, there has been an overwhelming accumulation of scientific evidence that have really supported the claim that massage therapy is beneficial. There was an author a while ago, John Yates, a PhD, who authored a book, A Physician's Guide to Therapeutic Massage, and basically outlined the benefits of massage, which include muscle spasms. The conditions that can be helped with therapeutic massage include muscle spasms and pain, spinal curvature like scoliosis or lordosis. Scoliosis is curvature side to side, and lordosis is back curvature. Soreness related to injury or stress, headaches, whiplash, TMJ syndrome or temporal mandible joint syndrome, as well as tension-related respiratory disorders like bronchial asthma or emphysema. Massage can also help reduce swelling and help correct posture as well as improve body function and facilitate the release of toxins and elimination of toxins from the body overall. The lymphatic massage, which is a specific form of massage, that can really help move metabolic waste through the body and promote rapid recovery from illness and disease. There are a lot of studies, but other studies have shown that massage can be used as an adjunct in the therapy of cardiovascular disorders and neurologic and gynecologic problems. And they often, in those cases, can be used in the place of pharmacologic drugs in certain situations, I would say. In general, like I mentioned, a wide variety of research studies, but out of all of those studies, in general, it's indicated that massage has a sedative effect on the nervous system, and that is what produces voluntary muscle relaxation. Also, it's effective in promoting recovery from fatigue due to excessive exercise. Massage can also help break up scar tissue and lesion, lessen fibrosis and adhesions. So that's going to help if you are having problems with moving areas because of scar tissue. Massage can help with that. It can also relieve certain types of pain, provides effective treatment in chronic inflammation conditions by increasing lymphatic circulation that we just talked about, and also swelling in certain areas. Massage can be helpful with that. It can affect circulation through the capillaries, veins, and arteries, and so that is going to increase blood flow to the muscles. Also can increase muscular contraction or peristaltic action in the intestines, which is going to help with bowel movements. And so there are lots of benefits of therapeutic massage. Besides, I know a lot of times you think of just going to a spa and being very relaxed with low lighting and, you know, oil massage, and so that's great, but there are a lot of other benefits to therapeutic massage, and there are lots of different types of massage. So how does massage release tension and promote relaxation overall? When you are having tension in a muscle, whether it's from doing something that you would normally do or from doing, you know, an awkward movement or stress, basically that contributes to the fatigue in muscles as well as pain by compressing the nerve fibers within that muscle. So if your muscles are contracting or tightening for a long period of time, that's going to interfere with elimination of chemical waste in the muscles and the surrounding tissues, and that can frequently cause nerve and muscle pain. So if you don't properly address it when it's going on, those body tensions have a tendency to build up into chronic patterns of stress. And if you have prolonged tensions, it can also affect or cause pain in other parts of the body. I'll give you an example. If you have a headache and it's just there every time you turn around, a lot of times it can be caused from overly tense muscles in your neck, in your shoulders, as well as in your lower back, and how your body tries to compensate for that. So with those, you can find that massage can break up those muscular waste deposits and stimulate circulation. And when you have a buildup of metabolic waste, that can often form a trigger point within the muscle. And what a trigger point is a specific area that's painful to the touch. I'm sure we all know what that is. It feels like knots or a rope within the muscle, and it perpetuates muscle tension. So by applying deep pressure to those points, the tension or spasm can often be eliminated. And we mentioned massage as being kind of relaxing. When you're trying to get out a knot or a tension or pressure point, that's not the most relaxing form, but it's very beneficial if you can just kind of attack that point and get rid of it, and it's much better when you can eliminate that. Now, the common types of therapeutic massage, the first is Swedish massage, and that's the most common form of massage therapy in the U.S. With Swedish massage, the therapists use a combination of stroking, kneading, and friction techniques over the full body, working on specifically on the superficial layer of muscle, the superficial skin layers of muscles. So it's between you and the practitioner to decide what areas of body to focus on and which element to employ. You may want a total body massage just kind of stroking, or you may want kneading in a particular pressure point, say on your neck, shoulders, and back. So that's a great part of massage. You can tailor it to your specific needs. The benefits of Swedish massage are numerous, and it promotes general relaxation as well as improved circulation, relief of muscle tension, restored flexibility, as well as elimination of those waste products that we were talking about in the tissues. The sessions usually last about an hour and can be done in conjunction with hydrotherapy in order to enhance the benefit, and that's hydrotherapy is being in the water. And it can be done by a professional person, but also a professional therapist, I should say. But also if money is a situation, but you do just want to try massage if you haven't had one before, or if you'd like to to try to get that in monthly, but don't want to pay too much. If there's a massage, school of massage in your area, that's an inexpensive way to get a massage, and it also helps those students with training. So I actually have done that before and have been pleased with my experience. Another type of therapeutic massage is deep tissue massage, and that employs a more direct pressure on deeper muscle layers. They use similar techniques of a stroke or friction or kneading as they work against the grain of the muscle. And sometimes you can feel sore immediately after those sessions, but it's really effective on lower back pain as well as on chronically tight muscles. If you have a knot in your shoulder that's just not getting away or going away no matter what you do, that may be a good thing to try, and in all ways they encourage you to drink lots of water after a manipulation like that. Sports massage is another type of massage. It used to be a luxury of elite athletes, but now anyone can have a sports massage, and it's really an effective way to remain healthy and injury-free, whether you're a professional athlete or just someone who exercises on the weekend. The sessions usually combine deep tissue with Swedish massage techniques, and it has a lot of benefits, like easing muscle aches and pains to enhance your performance before sporting events. It can also restore muscle tone and mobility after you vigorously work out, and can eliminate the buildup of lactic acid, which often causes pain and stiffness in the muscles. The last form of massage is lymphatic massage. So that focuses on improving the circulation of the lymphatic system, which is a body network of vessels and lymph nodes. What's done is you stimulate the lymph flow by lightly stroking the primary areas of the body that the lymph fluid is filtered through. So things like the neck, where you get those lymph nodes, armpits, upper torso, and groin area. And what that does is help prevent congestion in those areas and ensures that the body's able to receive adequate levels of oxygen. Another form of body work would be movement re-education therapies. Body work in this category is going to help improve your body function by addressing the way habitual movement patterns like walking, standing, and sitting, things we do all the time, how those impact our health. So by training people to become more aware of their bodies and the way they move, practitioners in this area can help improve posture, balance, and ease of movement, and that's believed to result in enhanced feelings of well-being. The two types that I'll discuss briefly are the Alexander technique. Frederick Alexander was one of the first people to notice how faulty posture in daily activities like sitting, standing, and moving is connected with serious physical and emotional problems. And so he pioneered a simple, effective approach to rebalancing the body through awareness, movement, and touch. He was a Shakespearean actor, and he began to experience voice loss. And so he just observed himself in the mirror and found that before he spoke, he did certain movements that were habitual, and he just did some work with himself to figure out how to correct that, and that's how the technique was developed. And so through that, he became aware that there was a correct relationship of your head, neck, and back for proper movement and functioning, and that when you're misusing your body in activities like sitting or standing, it can really get in the way of other things for your body. And can contribute to many diseases as well. So actually there were experiments done. One was done by Frank Pierce Jones at Tufts University in Boston, Massachusetts, that concluded that the Alexander technique could effectively interrupt or inhibit habitual and learned responses that interfere with proper body functioning. There was also a more recent study in women over the age of 65 that were taught the Alexander technique and showed improved imbalance in these women, leading researchers to conclude that it actually could help reduce the incidence of falls in women in that age group. Preliminary research also indicated that the Alexander technique was helpful in helping patients cope with Parkinson's disease as well as their overall sense of well-being, and it had a significantly more positive body concept and less difficulty in performing daily activities once they were taught the Alexander technique. Other research has shown that this technique is beneficial in treating chronic back pain. Of course, when it's incorporated as a part of a multidisciplinary approach, that's also including chiropractic, acupuncture, and psychological intervention. So in a typical session, a student may lie on a table or sit in a stool or even remain standing, and they may be given instructions to let your head move forward and up and things like that. So that's the Alexander technique. The Feldenkrais method, he was a physicist involved in nuclear radiation research, and he actually sustained a sports-related injury that had him exploring different methods and functioning of the body. And so he studied the nervous system and human behavior and applied all of his different experiences to get the notion of self-image. So he reasoned that if the negative habitual patterns of movement were interrupted, so things that we do, the walking, the sitting, and the standing, the body will learn how to function with a greater ease, fluidity, and emotion. And so that's going to improve one's self-image and simultaneously increase awareness and health overall. And in that technique is the importance of breath as well as integral form of movement are central. And there are two approaches that he developed working with students. One would be a group sessions called Awareness Through Movement, and then the other focuses on individualized hands-on touch and movement called functional integration. So that's that. A lot of people, performers and athletes, have praised Feldenkrais for improving their levels of performance, and many have utilized that even in a personal growth. The last subject, which I'll quickly talk about, is Rolfing, and that was developed by a biochemist, Ida Rolf. She's a PhD. And what it is, the cornerstone, is the body's structure profoundly affecting all physiologic and psychological processes. So Rolfing, and the popular name for that is structural integration, is based on the idea that human function is improved when the different segments of the body, like the head, the torso, pelvis, legs, and feet, are properly aligned. And most people aren't aware if and when their bodies are out of balance. So basically, she believed that manually manipulating and stretching the facial tissues could reestablish balance and poise. And the fascia is a thin, elastic, semi-fluid membrane that envelops all of the muscles in the body and unites them with the skin and underlying tissue. So it's believed by manipulating those and maintaining proper posture and function can be done with that. So Rolfers will apply pressure with the fingers, knuckles, and elbows in order to release fascial adhesions or things that are sticking together, and that helps to reorganize the tissue and lift the planes, lengthen, and balance the body segments overall. And depending on the degree of adhesion, will vary on how much pressure needs to be applied. And so a lot of people have seen that that can reduce chronic stress and changes in body structure, as well as enhance neurologic function overall. And many have found that to be helpful, not exactly relaxing, but definitely helpful in breaking up adhesions. So I hope that was a great overview and something that you may even consider trying some of those modalities. I just want to remind you that the information presented on this program is for education and motivation purposes only. Please consult your personal physician or other healthcare professional before starting, changing, or discontinuing any treatment. I really want to thank you again for joining me today. Please tune in next week when our topic will continue on with complementary and alternative medicine, and we'll look at yoga, tai chi, and qigong. Have a great week, and God bless.